This podcast was recorded Friday, August 21st at 10:33 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it. Like maybe John Kasich will actually fit into a party somewhere. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly hike through the jungle of Ohio politics. I'm Steve Brown, my partner in crime, Mike Thompson, taking a very much needed week off. We host a political podcast, so there are few things that get us excited as a good political convention. Hands on hearts, cheesy music blaring as people in silly hats wave signs. It's really great theater, unless, that is, it's held on Zoom, because let's be honest, Zoom kind of stinks. Unless you're our next guest who's joining us via Zoom today. How's that for an introduction? Paul Beck, a longtime political scientist at Ohio State University and a good friend of Snollygoster, is here to help us recap the busy week for Democrats and the role Ohioans played in that convention. Paul, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Well, thank you, Steve, and it's really good to be able to do it by Zoom.
Yeah, there was still some good theater here, even if the whole convention was held virtually. So let's unpack this. The biggest story of any nominating convention, of course, is who is getting nominated. Joe Biden's Thursday night acceptance speech was full of a mix of aspiration and really painting a dark picture of the current administration at times, I would say. Let's go through some of the things he said. He said that he will work to bridge the country's political divides.
I'll work hard for those who didn't support me, as hard for them as I did for those who did vote for me. That's the job of a president, to represent all of us, not just our base or our party. This is not a partisan moment. This must be an American moment.
A pretty thinly veiled criticism of President Trump there. Biden did get more direct when it came to the president as things went on.
He's failed to protect us. He's failed to protect America. And my fellow Americans, that is unforgivable.
So pretty pointed criticism of the president there. Things did get, as I said, more aspirational as the speech went on.
Love is more powerful than hate. Hope is more powerful than fear. And light is more powerful than dark. This is our moment. This is our mission. May history be able to say that the end of this chapter of American darkness began here tonight. As love and hope and light join in the battle for the soul of the nation. And this is a battle we will win, and we'll do it together. I promise you.
Paul Beck, a lot of aspirational talk there. Again, as I would call it, dark and light, the soul of the nation. This is the centrist who President Trump often calls Sleepy Joe, taking the president head on during this virtual acceptance speech. A few different tones there sprinkled in. What did you think of the overall message that Joe Biden sent?
Well, it's obviously a dual message. You know, one is criticism of the incumbent president. And you have to do that in a political campaign when you're running against the incumbent president. So that was important. But it's also important, I think, to voters for Biden as the Democratic nominee to reach beyond a criticism of the past and talk about what he would do, how he would be different from the current president. And I thought he focused on both of those points, as the convention has done. And as I said, it's very important to have that kind of dual focus to the Democratic campaign.
As the nominee, Joe Biden, obviously the person that the party is betting on here. But if you look at the list of the rest of the biggest speakers of the week, Kamala Harris, Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, Elizabeth Warren, Barack, and Michelle Obama, there's not another white man among them. And that, to me, that seemed like the Democratic Party was intentionally sending a message there.
Yeah, I think they are. Now, you know, again, they are dependent upon the votes of white men, but they also recognize that 2020, in some ways, and certainly at the presidential level, was the year of the woman. There were a bunch of very attractive candidates running for the presidency in 2020 on the Democratic side. And there's a big contrast there with the Republican Party, which has very few women in leadership circles, and certainly very few women in the Trump cabinet and among the White House staff of the president. So they want to make that contrast as well. Again, they need to be careful not to overdo it, because they still would like to be able to attract the votes of many, many, many men.
Both of the Obamas, when they spoke, tried to paint a picture of a president, I think I would say really just unfit to lead, not personal attacks, just not able to live up to the moment. And there is obviously plenty of fodder out there for personal attacks on President Trump, but unsurprisingly, especially with Michelle Obama, she went the high road, as she has famously promised to do. Do you think that's the most effective message here, is that what Democrats are trying to say is that President Trump is just not up to the moment?
Well, what we see in the presidential approval ratings that the Gallup poll and other pollsters have consistently produced is that President Trump's approval ratings are kind of mired in the low 40s, sometimes dip into the high 30s. That is a problem for a sitting president who is running for re-election. And so they really want to focus on that. And it's not just the Trump personality and style, and they see a lot of problems in that. And I would add, there are a lot of problems in that many Republicans see as well. But they also want to focus on the competence of the president, and whether he has risen to the level that one expects of a sitting president, particularly one who had no experience before and was expected, or at least hoped, people hoped that he would grow into the office as he presided over the country.
Democrats owned the national conversation this week, at least when it comes to party politics and the convention, right? They had the convention. Republicans are next week, so Democrats would have, and I guess what you would call political momentum right now. Do you think, all in all, that it was a success for the party's messaging? What they needed to do, did they do?
Well, I, going into this, wasn't sure what I should expect. It's hard to carry off something by long distance as they did. I thought they did actually a masterful job of that. They positioned themselves, I think, very well for the upcoming campaign. They've created a problem for the Trump campaign, and the problem is, how do they then have a convention that can somehow contrast in an effective way with the Democratic convention? I think the only thing that was missing in 2020 for the Democrats was the kind of audience the conventions have attracted in the past. It's hard to know exactly how to measure that audience. It certainly, at least on the first two nights, was lower than the audiences had been for the 2016 conventions, Democratic conventions, and even Republican convention in that year. But of course, the media has changed. Many more people are getting their news through the internet and a variety of other ways, and that's not going to be picked up in the normal Nielsen ratings of convention audiences. So on the whole, I thought they brought it off very, very smoothly. I think they did what they wanted to do. I also think, by the way, that we probably are seeing a precedent here for the next convention, 2024, a Democratic convention, that is, that will rely more on things through the internet than past conventions ever have. And it'll be interesting to see how the Republicans counter this. But yeah, go ahead, Steve.
No, I was going to say, what do you think Republicans need to do next week? I mean, a lot of when you host a virtual convention, a lot of the lessons that you learn are technical, right? It's how to push the right buttons for a board operator. But do you think there is a clear message that Republicans can learn from this convention?
Oh, I think they can. I want to make a distinction, though, between what they should do and what they will be able to do, because they have one important factor that has to be brought into their consideration, and that is, what does President Trump want to do? And what I'm looking for, I think, next week is a Republican convention that'll be much darker than the Democratic convention, where the president will go on the attack, as he has done throughout his presidency, will try to belittle the Democrats, will try to attack their nominees, will predict all kinds of dark futures for the country if Biden and Harris are to be elected. Now, the irony, or the paradox maybe, of that is that he has been president for almost 4 years. And so it's pretty hard to paint a dark future when you are in the present. It's much easier to do that when you're running against an incumbent or an incumbent administration, as Trump was in 2016. The Democrats haven't really used that as a campaign tactic. I expect them to do that, however, in the future. But coming back to the Republicans, I think the perceived success of the Democratic convention is something that is going to have to be put into their planning for what they do next week. Now, whether, again, they can carry it off, I think depends upon what Trump wants to do and how he wants to run things. And if he really wants to treat the convention, the Republican convention, as a proverbial Trump rally, then they're going to have problems, I think, with the contrast.
Yeah, I think precedent would say that that's probably what they're going to do, right? We certainly do not know, though, what President Trump will do. He's very unpredictable. I would like to close on somewhat of a lighter note, or I guess lighter. Our old friend, former Governor John Kasich, also spoke on Monday, the first night of the convention. In those pre-recorded marks, he was literally at a crossroads, a fork in the road, making an appeal to voters to back Joe Biden. He talked about how Biden is, quote, reasonable, faithful, and respectful. Kasich also talked about the principles that have made him a lifelong Republican.
But what I have witnessed these past 4 years belies those principles. Many of us can't imagine 4 more years going down this path. And that's why I'm asking you to join with me in choosing a better way forward.
Paul Beck, really more of the same from Kasich there. He wants to be known as a true conservative, but he's still just very anti-Trump. And I think at this point, he's burned just about every bridge he had in the Republican Party. He just spoke at the DNC endorsing Joe Biden. It's pretty remarkable when you consider where we were a few years ago with the passage of Senate Bill 5 and Kasich, this fiscal hawk, balancing the federal budget. It's really a remarkable turn for him.
Well, I think it is. He certainly has burned bridges among the Republican leadership. Now, of course, the question is, what will happen if Trump loses the election in 2020? Will we see a return to the old Republican Party? I think we probably won't. And it may well be that Kasich's career as a Republican office holder has come to an end, and I think he suspects that it has. What he's doing, though, is reaching out to a number of disgruntled Republican voters, people who voted for Trump in 2016, many of whom are traditional conservatives who are not happy with the Trump administration. And what he's trying to do, and of course what the Democrats wanted him to do, is to say, hey, it's okay. It's okay to vote against Trump in 2020, and it's okay to, in some ways, honor your conservative principles by casting that vote against him. I, by the way, while we have an opportunity, wanted to come back to a broader point about this year and the conventions. If you go back in time all the way to the 1830s, the principal way, the only way that candidates were nominated for president was through what could be called the caucus convention system. There would be meetings at the local level. They would then translate into meetings at higher levels. Delegates would be elected ultimately to go to the national nominating conventions. There would be all this hoopla in the convention hall. Candidates would be nominated. It was a very positive event for the party and certainly for the party faithful. That system, I think, has ended. It, by the way, back in 1968, the Democrats nominated Hubert Humphrey for president. Hubert Humphrey won no caucuses, or no primaries, I'm sorry, and didn't participate in any primaries. He got into the campaign too late for that. And so we've gone from a system that held in place from the 1830s all the way to 1968, to a system now by 2024 that's going to have no caucuses.
Paul Beck, longtime political scientist at Ohio State University, helping us break down the Democratic National Convention, which was held virtually this week. Republicans have their own convention next week. And on next week's episode, we'll recap that as well. Paul Beck, thanks as always for joining Snollygoster.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve. And I also miss Mike. I hope he's having some good time.
I think he is. I'm not sure. He makes a point to detach during vacations, which I respect. Is there something you've always wondered about Columbus? Like,
how did Circleville get its name?
Does Columbus have an accent?
Are Ohio's highways based on American Indian trails?
How much has the NRA donated to Ohio lawmakers?
What happened to passenger rail in Columbus?
Curious CBUS is WOSU's series that investigates questions submitted by you, our listeners. What have you always wondered about Columbus? Submit a question you're curious about today at wosu.org/curious. Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week Award, which we use to honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. This week, it was really a slam dunk. It goes to President Trump and new Postmaster General Louis DeJoy. The newly installed DeJoy cut overtime, limited post office hours, which led to big delays. The post office also started removing mailboxes in Ohio and around the country. These could normally be seen as sensible cost-cutting measures during any other time, but as we know, the president is on the ballot this fall in an election that will largely be conducted by mail. Trump has been sowing seeds of doubt with claims about voter fraud that are at best unproven and at worst completely false. DeJoy is set to testify to Congress on Friday, shortly after I'm recording this episode. But earlier this week, he and Trump caved to the political pressure and said they would not implement any more changes to the Postal Service before the election. So for political maneuvering using the Postal Service that could literally be vital to our democracy this November, President Trump and Louis DeJoy, you are our Snollygosters of the Week. If you have a suggestion for next week, please send it to snollygoster@wosu.org. And as always, thanks to our student producer, Jack Long, and our web producer, Michael DeBonis. Until next week, for Mike Thompson, I'm Steve Brown for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.